Welcome to The Lead, the exclusive news magazine of Northeast Texas, here on your station, 88.9 KETR. Good morning, I'm your host, Scott Harvey. This week, what Texas lawmakers are considering on how to improve food shortages among families in statistically one of the worst states.
Really enabling people to figure out how to grow their own food is an area that has a lot of potential for allowing people to help feed themselves.
And it's been a year since a deadly EF5 tornado struck the city of Joplin, Missouri. How a local group continues to lend a hand in the rebuilding effort.
Whatever they need is what we do. That's how we walk into it. We don't go in saying, this is what we want to do. We go in saying, what do you need?
Those stories and the local connection of a Major League Baseball player, all coming up. Next, we'll check out the week's headlines. You're listening to The Lead on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Support for KETR is provided by Aerobic Water, supplying point-of-use filter and water coolers and under-sink water filtration systems. Aerobic bottled water is delivered to homes and offices in Northeast Texas, Oklahoma, and Arkansas. More information is available at aerobicwater.com.
Packers.
Vikings.
We come from different places.
Uptown.
Downtown.
We come to different conclusions.
Half empty.
Half full.
But when we live united, we make a real difference in the building blocks of life. Children succeed in school, families gain financial stability, the health of our neighbors improves, and suddenly so do our communities. Real change won't happen without you.
Live united.
So give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Sign up today at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to The Lead on your station, 88.9 KETR. Now time to check out some of the headlines from this week throughout Northeast Texas. Five Northeast Texas offices are among 56 planned closings by the Texas Health and Human Services System to consolidate operations. Rather than lose their job, the 25 local employees will be relocated to another office, but low-income customers may have to travel further to receive assistance. Commerce police have arrested a 26-year-old Paris man for online solicitation of a minor following a lengthy investigation. The two victims are said to be 13 and 14 years of age. No names have been released. More details are expected upon the suspect's arraignment. City of Greenville officials Tuesday voted not to take any more action concerning lawsuits against them filed by L3. The city has spent more than $1 million defending itself from two lawsuits concerning the proposed replat of Majors Field Municipal Airport. The North Texas Municipal Water District has voted to ease watering restrictions after spring rains have filled Lakes Levan, Jim Chapman, Tewakinee, and Bonham. The reduced limitations allow customers to water twice a week, effective June 1st. Family members of Cora Maccabee and Brandon Howell are still seeking answers on the sixth anniversary of their murders. The two were found in a residence south of Greenville on May 25, 2006. Hunt County Sheriff Randy Meeks says he's assigned a new investigator to the case. Hunt County Commissioners Tuesday voted in favor of a judgment in the amount of $1,200. That's to be paid by A&R Demolition. The company is alleged to have illegally disposed of debris from the former West Halls dormitory on the A&M Commerce campus at two separate areas in rural Hunt County. The Bonham Fire Department will continue to serve the emergency medical service needs of Fannin County citizens after striking a three-year deal. Thursday's agreement, which takes effect immediately, means the department will avoid layoffs. Greenville convenience store owner is the victim of a pedestrian vehicle collision that occurred last weekend on a dark frontage road. Kamal Ahmed Chowdhury was reportedly standing next to a tow truck after his car had broken down when he was struck by a passing vehicle. Dozens of employees at Lawn Morris College in Jacksonville, Texas, have been furloughed in a financial reconstruction move. All but 11 employees remain, and President Miles McCall has announced his resignation. The school has an enrollment of slightly more than 1,000 students. Wolf City Animal Shelter President Jody McIntyre says dog owners need to spay and neuter their pets to avoid overcrowding at local shelters. In Fort Worth, concerns arose over the possible mass euthanization of dozens of healthy animals. Those concerns were put to rest after nearly 300 animals were adopted in 2 days. The Raines County Grand Jury has indicted Ronald Ryan Shepard of Illinois on 3 counts of cattle theft. The Brookfield Cattle Company official is alleged to have failed to pay thousands back to the Raines County market. He's been missing for more than a month. And Governor Rick Perry spoke at the Landmark in Greenville Wednesday to endorse a couple of state candidates and address his proposed Texas budget compact. We have the audio from his speech at our website. Also at our website, more details on each one of these stories that made headlines this week throughout Northeast Texas. When we come back, a conversation with Kim Aaron, Vice President for Policy, Programs, and Research at the North Texas Food Bank. This is your station, 88.9 KETR.
Public radio programs attract educated consumers and business decision makers. You can reach this highly desirable audience with your company's marketing message on KETR. It might be time to make our listeners your customers. Find out how by calling 903-513-9684. Ask for Sherry Gardner.
Mary Clark is your tour guide to the world.
Off we sped through Siem Reap and into the countryside, where we passed the Cambodians walking, biking, and riding. Mount Pleasant lives up to its name as a pleasing place to visit. Back at the restaurant, the cooking began. We moved between the chopping table and kitchen and used blenders, fine knives.
Let Mary Clark take you on a trip without even leaving your radio. During Mary Clark Traveler, Tuesday mornings at 7:20 during Morning Edition on 88.9 KETR.
And welcome back to The Lead. On Tuesday, Texas lawmakers heard testimony from farmers and activists about possible legislation for next year that would promote better health and reduce the amount of people that are not getting enough to eat in this state. Kim Aaron is the Vice President for Policy, Programs, and Research at the North Texas Food Bank, serving 13 counties in our region. She said advocates are delighted the hearing was called, which shows the state legislature is recognizing there is a problem and something needs to be done.
We're so thrilled that rather than us knocking on their doors to tell them what's going on, we actually had the opportunity for them to invite several members of the hunger community to come in and tell them what's going on. So we love the fact that they took the initiative on this. Certainly with the most recent recession that we've had, there have been more people impacted by food scarcity or food insecurity than we've certainly experienced in the past. And what I like to say to people is, if you look around, if you think about what hunger looks like, if you close your eyes and you hear the word hunger and what picture comes to mind, pretty much consistently we tend to have sort of a third world perspective, very thin, bones showing through, wide-eyed children with bloated stomachs. And unfortunately, in our community, you need to just look at the person next door to see what the person that is hungry looks like. But because we don't tend to look, hunger doesn't look the same in our community, we tend to be not as aware of it. But certainly, what we at the food bank know is that we provide access to about 90,000 meals a day through our 13-county area, through the various programs that we have, and we know that that's probably meeting about a third of the need. And more we see coming into particular our member agencies that receive food through our warehouse, more and more they're seeing people in lines that potentially had been donors in the past, who had been volunteers in the organization in the past, but more and more they're people that are regular folks out in the community that have lost jobs and had a hard time getting back employed. They're people that have been able to find a job, but they're underemployed. They don't work full time, or they make less than they did before. And as other things have gone up in price, and unfortunately we're starting to see gas prices come down a little bit, which has an impact on a lot of different things, people have had to make really hard decisions about, is it food or is it medication? Is it food or the electric bill? Is it food or rent? So it is a very persistent problem. And as we gain traction in what we can do, it seems like the problem keeps growing.
I see language that says Texas has the second highest rate of people having trouble to get food.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was more than 4 million Texans in 2010. What mm-hmm. constitutes having trouble to get food?
Well, there are a lot of different definitions, and you don't hear the word hunger used a lot because that tends to be sort of an emotional feeling type of word. So you tend to see the language food scarcity or food insecurity, rather, used a lot. And there are different levels of food insecurity. The USDA establishes some sort of criteria for different levels of food insecurity. And it can range anywhere from, is there stress in the family household because we can get food today and we can get food tomorrow, but we're not sure about where we'll get food next week, to we're not sure we have food today, but we're not sure we can get food tomorrow, to we don't have food today for everyone in the household, so the adults are eating or sacrificing some of their food for the children in the household, to we don't have food at all. So there's sort of a range of how people get classified in that category. And a lot of it has to do with just the concept of insecurity, is that I'm not sure I'm going to have it going forward. So there's a range of folks who are impacted by this. And we're concerned about all of them.
Has the state legislature, have lawmakers had hearings like this before? You said you were pleased that they had actually called this, that you're not asking them to call it, they're asking mm-hmm. you, they're coming to you, but had they come to you before?
Well, certainly the state legislature has recognizes this as a concern, and they have different ways of reaching out. There are different programs that they have that we're interacting with the legislative bodies on an ongoing basis as they are looking for different types of information. In terms of actual hearings like this, I'll be really candid. I've been with the food bank a little less than a year. This is the first one I'm aware of since I've been here. But I know that we have ongoing relationships with the Texas Department of Agriculture, with regional representatives from the USDA. So we have a lot of dialogue with them. But something as formal as this particular hearing, again, my tenure is a little abbreviated, but at the time I've been here, this is the only one I'm aware of.
Speaking with Kim Aaron, she is the Vice President for Policy Programs and Research at the North Texas Food Bank. Some of the items that I see coming from this testimony earlier this week were that lawmakers should pass laws that make it easier to produce and sell fruit and vegetables mm-hmm. in poor communities and promote better health. Would you speak to that?
Absolutely, because more and more we're seeing that gardening initiatives, creating sustainable, replicatable food models, really enabling people to figure out how to grow their own food is an area that has a lot of potential for allowing people to help feed themselves. So certainly some of the discussion that occurred on, I guess that was Tuesday mm-hmm. around this was really particularly interesting for us, as we've identified, number one, as part of our Rethink Hunger strategy, which is the strategic plan we adopted last summer, healthier is a piece of it. So we really want to focus as a food bank on distributing healthy, nutritious food. So number one, we know that fresh fruits and vegetables are key to that. Helping people figure out how they can do this on their own through their own gardening initiatives, or that working with farmers like some of the Texans for Texans programs and things like that, which I think that the Texas Food Bank Network had the opportunity to talk about in their testimony, that there's a lot of mechanisms for connecting the agricultural industry and even small farmers with people that have needs. So there's a lot of different distribution points where this fresh produce and these farming initiatives could come into play that seem to create a benefit for a lot of different or individuals involved in the food process. But we're particularly interested in some of the as a food bank, in some of the areas around growing the community gardens and growing produce and actually educational initiatives that teach people how to grow their own fruits and vegetables, and in particular have been looking at some of the models with kids in schools and teaching them how to grow fresh fruits and vegetables. And you know, and if you can do that, you almost create kids. You have two options if you're working with kids in terms of growing fresh fruits and vegetables. You're teaching them a skill, and potentially even teaching them, you know, building them into a career in the future if they could gain an interest in actual farming. And there's a lot of federal support and state support around those types of initiatives, trying to get people more interested in the farming community and farming as a profession. So there's a lot of nice touch points for all of those types of initiatives.
Okay, well, you mentioned community gardening, and some of the other things that you mentioned surround community gardening, mm-hmm. and they also go with farmers markets. And
right.
One statistic I see is Texas ranks 43rd in the nation in the number of farmers markets and small farms per capita. Of the farmers markets you've experienced, you've had a part in community gardens. There's one right here in our backyard in Commerce.
Mm-hmm.
How beneficial are they to the community?
They're extremely beneficial, but there's tremendous opportunity for them to be even more so. There are numerous farmers markets here where we're situated, in Dallas, Dallas City, Dallas County. There are several here, but one of the challenges we face is access, because we have, you know, and let's just use Dallas as an example. We have the Dallas Farmers Market. We have the White Rock Farmers Market, which are both certified by the Texas Department of Agriculture. And that certification is essential to take advantage of some of the state and federal programs that are available. There's others in the surrounding community. You know, I won't necessarily name all of them, but when you go further out, there are a lot, there are more that sort of touch the more rural communities. So they're here. They aren't as much in Center City, in the urban areas as you would like. And so what happens, particularly for people disadvantaged or underprivileged who are the ones that sometimes have the greatest need for nutritious food, if the farmers markets aren't where they're accessible to them, a lot of these folks have transportation challenges as well. So them getting to the farmers markets can be a challenge. So that's where the community gardens almost become almost like a bridge into the farmers market, because the community gardens can serve a community that can't necessarily access the farmers market or access a farmers market whenever it's open, again, if transportation challenges are present. And then the other piece is, if you go to a farmers market and you want to buy a lot of stuff but you're taking the bus and trying to get things back on the bus, you know, it's just a challenge. So I think we have tremendous opportunity to try to talk about how do we get product from farmers markets closer into folks that are tend to be more urban so that they can get to it. And there are some interesting initiatives happening, particularly here in the Dallas area, and hopefully we'll see them blowing out into to more of the areas where we serve. But there are a number of urban agricultural initiatives, and actually the Dallas Food Planning Association, which I think is another thing that was brought up in the testimony on Tuesday, the impact of food planning associations can have. There is a Dallas Food Planning Association that's launching and ramping up, and a piece of that is urban agriculture. So it's really exciting, because we're on the front end of so many very, very promising things, and, you know, in dialogue with different groups within the community, and to see the state legislators starting to have some conversations around the same things that we've been talking about for a while is really encouraging to us.
Texas, I believe, is the largest distributor of SNAP funds, Supplemental mm-hmm. Nutrition Assistance Program. Does that need to be modified federally? Is the program efficient the way it is in Texas? How would you assess that?
Well, I actually have part of my staff are folks that do SNAP outreach. We have a contract through Texas Food Bank Network with the state to do outreach and take applications. We do not have the authority to approve anything at all, but we can facilitate the process by taking applications. And our observation is that the state has been very proactive in trying to figure out ways to do this more effectively and more efficiently. And the things that they've put into place over the last year to 2 years have made a tremendous improvement in the reach of the program, as well as the ease with which people can access it and the timeliness with which their applications get processed. So there have been tremendous improvements over the last couple of years in how SNAP outreach and SNAP applications are occurring. With that, you know, SNAP is an interesting thing, because as people's life circumstances change, they tend to flow in and out of the system. And recognizing that, there's a lot more that's being done to try to improve the efficiency of that, and a lot of pilot programs kind of in place looking at how all of that can be improved. So I think there's a lot of positive energy around it. In terms of changes to the program itself, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about whether it makes sense for the states to have less control and less influence over how what the qualifying criteria are. At this point in time, you know, the federal government pushes it down to the states, and each state can kind of decide how they want to implement and whether they're going to have any types of benchmarks or limitations that come into play in terms of access. You know, that's really a federal and state decision to make, to say, do the states need to do things differently, or do they need to be more consistent in how they do things across? Our largest concern is just making sure that it's available to people that have the greatest need.
Well, it'll be interesting how it all plays out. There's obviously a need that needs to be addressed, and of course, no state wants to be at the toward the bottom of this list.
But, no, we don't.
Texas certainly needs to improve, and they want to better assist those that are hungry in this community, and certainly shorten the list of people that need the food on a more consistent basis. In the meantime, people can always donate to the food banks and help in any way they can, right?
Absolutely. We will take your time. We need volunteers. Many of the programs we have, senior feeding programs, kids feeding programs, we rely almost 100% on volunteers to help us deliver those programs. We will take your funds if you would like to write us a check. We can always put good use to that. Our overhead percentage is around 6%, so you can rest assured that your money is going to be well used. And we can also always take your voice because we're always looking for people that want to write letters and advocate on our behalf.
Kim Aaron is the Vice President for Policy, Programs, and Research at the North Texas Food Bank, serving 13 counties in our region. She joined us this week to address a recent testimony from farmers and activists to Texas lawmakers about improving food scarcity statewide. When we return here on The Lead, we have our Friday feature for you. That's next.
I'm Guy Raz, the weekend host of All Things Considered. Our show isn't simply a recap of the news. We explore different angles on the day's stories, going beyond the usual headlines. When you listen, you'll discover something you didn't know, maybe hear a perspective that might surprise you. Expect to know more every Saturday and Sunday on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Starts at 4 p.m. weekends on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Hi, I'd like to report a bear sighting, as in Smokey Bear.
Continue.
I was burning yard waste. He told me to remember that if it's too hot to touch, it's too hot to leave.
You know, 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
I know that now.
As usual, the talking bear gets all the credit. Always burn responsibly and contact your local fire department for open burning regulations. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ag Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Welcome back to The Lead. It's now time for our Friday feature. Nearly all the debris has been cleaned up, but large sections of a devastated Joplin, Missouri remain a year after the city was struck by an EF5 tornado that killed 161 people. Tuesday's one-year anniversary of the storm was highlighted by thousands who walked the four-mile path of destruction. Over the last year, people from across the globe have traveled to the southwest Missouri town to offer their help in the rebuilding process. Among the missionaries is New Life Baptist Church youth minister Lonnie Sanders and his group of students from Cooper, Texas in Delta County. He visited the tornado-stricken Joplin four times last year, most recently over the Thanksgiving holiday. Sanders says he's going back in 2 weeks.
We don't go in saying, this is what we want to do. We go in saying, what do you need? Last time I talked to them, we were going to do some big projects, help clean up some big areas that they needed. We're taking about 50 people.
Sanders says it's pretty amazing the progress made there, noting that 6 months after the tornado hit, the area looked just like empty land rather than a disaster site. He says to see so many people come together for a common cause has played a major role in his group's outlook on disaster response.
There were hundreds of thousands of volunteers that came through during the tornado and the disaster. And people just volunteering and doing whatever. So it was pretty amazing to see what a lot of people working together could accomplish.
According to Sanders, the youth group may go back again after this next visit in June, but also may explore visiting other disaster areas. In a Tuesday interview with Marketplace Morning Report, Joplin Mayor Pro Tem Bill Scarce says business in the city is pretty good, all things considered.
Very few businesses have not built back. Less than 40 businesses have indicated that they will not rebuild. But in light of that, we have 20 brand new businesses that have been constructed in the tornado zone, which gives us a net loss of only about 19 businesses, which we think is phenomenal.
But Scarce adds that help is still needed for Joplin. With the help of people like Lonnie Sanders and the dozens of youth group students from Delta County, as well as other area churches, the city of Joplin will continue to receive strong support in the months and years ahead from people near and far. Sanders' group leaves June 3rd. Friday feature airs each Friday during The Lead at 10 a.m. and again at 4:45 p.m. during All Things Considered here on your station. And if you have a story idea you think would be best told as part of our feature, we'd love to hear from you. Send your ideas to scott@ketr.org. That's scott@ketr.org. If you ask KETR's Jared Knight, his guess would be that Tom Middlebrooks, former Wolf City athletic director, head football coach, is proud of his son, who's making a name for himself in professional baseball, far from his native East Texas.
On May 6, 2012, Boston Red Sox rookie Will Middlebrooks hits his first major league home run. It was a grand slam against the Baltimore Orioles at Fenway Park. That was audio from a YouTube post by a fan. The game ended in a loss, but this kid, who was brought up from AAA Pawtucket to fill in for an injured Kevin Youkilis, has already made a name for himself. It's a name that's not unfamiliar here in Northeast Texas. Will was born in 1988 in Greenville to Tom and Julie Middlebrooks. Their family spent some time in Wolf City, where I went to junior high and high school, as Tom was the athletic director and head football coach. Their family, which also included Will's sisters Lacey and Mary, moved to Texarkana, where Will went on to be the star punter and pitcher for Liberty ILO. At some point around the time Will was 12 years old, he met Ann Lux. Her career path led her to the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders, whom she recently left in order to become a baseball wife. See, Will asked her to marry him on New Year's Eve 2012. He's had quite a career in the minor leagues, including stops at Pawtucket and Portland within the Red Sox organization. His first game with the Bo Sox was May 2nd. Right now, his batting average is .296, a hair better than his entire minor league batting average. I'd be remiss not to mention that Will's sister Lacey pitches for the University of Tulsa, and I understand that on Mother's Day, both Will and Lacey hit home runs within a few minutes of each other in their respective games. I wonder if it were planned that way. At any rate, Bo Sox manager Bobby Valentine doesn't seem interested in letting a now-healthy Kevin Youkilis off the roster, but Middlebrooks stays in the lineup for now. Having known the family growing up, as many folks did here in Northeast Texas, I hope to be watching SportsCenter highlights that feature hometown kid Will Middlebrooks for many years to come. Jared Knight, KETR News.
Thank you, Jared. Let's now check out the events calendar for Northeast Texas. And we have several activities taking place, a lot of them outside this weekend, so if you want to brave the heat, here you go. The Phoenix Charter School will host a Renaissance Fair at the Hunt County Fairgrounds. That'll take place tomorrow, Saturday, from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Vendors will be selling arts and crafts, as well as several food items. There will also be jousting, storytelling, jugglers, and fencing, among many other items. Phoenix Charter School is now enrolling for the fall pre-K through 12th grade class. This was submitted to our events calendar. You can do the same at ketr.org/events. Jim Beach over at the Cooper Lake State Park likes to submit to the events calendar, and what he's got planned for Sunday, it's a nature hike and a talk about trees. It takes place at the South Sulphur Unit. Meet at the Honey Creek Amphitheater for a hike and talk about the trees with the park ranger. That's from 2:30 until 3:30 Sunday afternoon. Again, visit ketr.org/events for more information, and we strongly encourage you to post your own event, and we may read it on the air. That's going to do it for today's installment of The Lead. Thanks to my guest Kim Aaron with the North Texas Food Bank and her thoughts on food scarcity in Texas. Lonnie Sanders, youth minister with New Life Baptist Church, who is taking a fifth trip to tornado-stricken Joplin, Missouri. And thanks to Jared Knight for his story Major League Baseball player Will Middlebrooks. We're back same time next Friday at 10 a.m., and our show re-airs at 9 a.m. on Saturdays. And you can hear archives of the show at our website, ketr.org. Coming up next is Texas Matters. This has been The Lead, the exclusive news magazine of Northeast Texas, here on your station, 88.9 KETR. I'm your host, Scott Harvey. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.